From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the show, part two of a conversation between KCPW's Ross Chambliss and representatives from the Utah Association of Counties about a shift in property tax burdens and their involvement in the appeal process.
The counties became concerned because we saw this tax shift from the centrally assessed to the locally assessed taxpayer. And when you think of centrally assessed, these are often multinational corporations. Locally assessed, we're talking homeowners and local business owners.
The concluding part of that conversation, your summary of the day's top local headlines and an update from the World Cup, just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up just ahead on the show, part two in a conversation about a shift in tax burden from centrally assessed to locally assessed taxpayers. But before that, we have these headlines. The ongoing western drought has landed every Utah county on a disaster declaration from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Salt Lake Tribune reports that Governor Herbert received a letter this week from U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack informing him that Duchesne and Uinta counties have been added to that list. The rest of Utah's counties were already on it. The designation means farmers in all 29 Utah counties can request low-interest emergency loans. The state's farmers are suffering from not having enough water due to a below-average snowpack. And it's not just farmers who are feeling the impact of the drought. Limits on outdoor watering during the hottest times of the day have been in place for several years in a number of Utah cities and towns. Utah Governor Gary Herbert held his monthly KUED press conference on Thursday, just one day after a critical Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling on same-sex marriage. The decision, upholding a federal judge's strikedown of Utah's same-sex marriage ban, is expected to make its way before the U.S. Supreme Court. State officials and the governor have expressed a desire to see the case through to its finality. At his press conference, the governor doubled down on his strong preference to appeal to the Supreme Court, saying that it's simply a matter of protecting the state's constitution and defending the will of Utah voters.
If the law had been put on the books by the people through the legislative process or initiative petition, however, that said that in Utah we would in fact allow same-sex marriage, I'd be defending that law today if somebody challenged it and was going through the process of the court. So I don't think we should pick and choose the laws that we enforce and have our personal opinions get in the way once the people have spoken, and they have in Utah. We'll defend it until conclusion.
In addition to Wednesday's ruling by the Tenth Circuit Court, the governor addressed reports that he's running for re-election in 2016. Herbert mostly confirmed those reports, but he qualified his decision with a nuanced statement.
I find it a little bit awkward that we're talking about 2016 and we haven't even finished the elections of 2014. But with the encouragement and the questions being asked, I told my supporters that it is my intention to run again in 2016. I'm certainly going to do what I need to do to put myself in a position to do that. But I did emphasize, and I'll tell you, this is not a formal announcement. But it is my intention to run in 2016.
In his ongoing negotiations with the Obama administration regarding his Healthy Utah plan, Herbert says about 26 out of 35 or 36 issues have been resolved. But the governor says more work needs to be done before he can present a, quote, official plan to the Utah legislature. The governor hopes for a vote on his Healthy Utah plan sometime this year. Governor Herbert's monthly news conference airs in its entirety this Sunday at 5:30 p.m. on KUED. And those are our local headlines for the day. I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. We'll be right back. Throughout the 2014 World Cup, KCPW's Ryan Cunningham and Real Salt Lake blogger Matt Montgomery have provided daily updates on the tournament, along with interesting insights surrounding the world's favorite sport. Today it's Team USA versus Germany.
Matt Montgomery, it's day 15 of the World Cup. I'm not usually excited about a loss for the American team, but today I was elated when the United States lost by not too much.
Yeah, the United States only lost by one goal, 1-0 to Germany. Definitely a great score against one of the top three teams in the world. So by only losing 1-0, and Portugal beating Ghana in the other game 2-1. It led us to a second-place finish in our group, which puts us to the round of 16, which is incredibly exciting.
Now, you watched this game at Rio Tinto Stadium where Real Salt Lake plays. Can you tell me about what that experience was like? What were the fans like? Were they excited?
There were probably 1,500, 2,000 fans, somewhere in that range. They had it on their big screen. Obviously, it's not the biggest screen in the world, but it was a lot of fun. Not the highest resolution screen, so sometimes you had to guess whether a player was Kyle Beckerman or maybe Jermaine Jones.
But, the two dreaded players.
Yeah, but you definitely could tell when it was Michael Bradley because the light just gleamed off of him.
Of course, Portugal defeated Ghana, eliminating both teams. So Germany and the United States are going to be coming out of that group. Who are the United States going to be playing next?
We'll face Belgium, who beat South Korea today 1-0. The other side, coming in second in that group, is Algeria, who tied Russia today. So it'll be really interesting to see how the United States fares against Belgium. But we do have a historic 3-0 win against them. I believe that was somewhere in the 1930s, maybe 1930, 1940-ish. So maybe we'll get a little repeat of history there.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think there are any players on today's roster from that roster, but maybe they'll be there in spirit. There was one other group decided today. What was that one?
That was Group H with Belgium coming through and Algeria also coming through.
Okay, and this is the end of the group stage, right? Every group has been settled by now?
Yeah, for the first time in 2 weeks, there are no matches tomorrow.
What are we going to talk about tomorrow?
How great the United States is, and a little bit of patriotism, I suppose. And honestly, playing Belgium for our first game isn't so bad. And we would, if we happen to go through, play the winner of Argentina-Switzerland. So certainly there's a great deal to be excited about. I'm not going to get my hopes too high, but you never know.
I see Matt Montgomery's eyes getting big as he looks at the possibilities for the American team. All right, that's about all the time we have for today. Matt Montgomery, we'll see you tomorrow, and we'll find something to talk about.
Oh, I don't think there's any shortage.
Again, that was KCBW's Ryan Cunningham with blogger Matt Montgomery, who writes about Real Salt Lake at rslsoapbox.com. You can also follow Matt on Twitter. His handle is @thecrossbarrsl. I'm Roger McDonough. You're tuned into The Rundown. Stay with us. And thanks again for tuning into The Rundown. Today, we'll be concluding our discussion between KCBW's Ross Chambliss and Adam Troop and Ari Vandegraaff from the Utah Association of Counties about the trend of shifting property tax revenues from centrally assessed taxpayers, companies whose operations spread across county lines in Utah, to locally assessed taxpayers, homeowners, and smaller local businesses. In part one of this interview on Tuesday, we got a quick primer on property taxes in the state and on this trend. Today, an examination of the appeal process, a look at a recent proposal from the May Interim Revenue and Taxation Committee meeting that has counties concerned over possible exclusion from this process and potential conflicts of interest. Here now is that conversation.
So counties can and have been challenging these tax commission assessments of centrally assessed businesses, and often they are turning to you, the Utah Association of Counties, for help. Adam, can you talk about this appeal process and how it plays out?
I can, and I'll try not to get too deep into detail that may not be particularly interesting, but I guess that the basics are pretty important. The process that we go through as the Association of Counties in coordination with our members is to take a look at the valuations that are issued by the Property Tax Division every year, and that's the folks who do the valuation on these centrally assessed properties. When they put them forward, they do so using one of the several methods they have an option for, or a number of different methods typically, and then weighting those to determine what they think is the most accurate and what they think is the most appropriate. If someone wants to challenge that process, a taxpayer does, or the counties do, or technically the cities or the school districts, they do have the ability to do that under this current statutory structure. They do that by indicating their intent to appeal to the tax commission and ask the tax commission for a decision. Once that starts, no matter who initiates it, the other side has the ability to intervene, and then the tax commission essentially steps in as the arbiter. As that process goes forward, the taxpayer and the county have the ability to say, we want to come to an agreement on this, or we want to put forward our own opinion on and our own appraisal on what the value is, and hope that we can come to an agreement between the parties. If we can't, then you go to the tax commission for a decision. Tax commission then renders their decision, and from that point, the parties are also able to appeal to the district court for a decision. Appeals to the district court are relatively rare, certainly very rare compared to the number of valuations that are dealt with every year through the property tax division. But when they do go to the district court, they end up taking a good deal of time to work through the process and can take years to get through court process due to valuation issues and other litigation issues.
And in the court process, when it gets to that, we're talking about it becomes a discussion between lawyers and a judge ultimately?
Correct. It's not a jury matter, it's a trial judge matter.
Okay. Typically, before you even get to, if you have to get to the district court, I mean, how long are we talking on average that this appeal process might occur?
For going through a district court, easily 2 to 3 years. And one of the issues that we've both the taxpayers and the tax collecting entities face is when you appeal a decision at one point, let's say a tax commission decision, and you go forward to district court matter, you're going to run into that same issue the following year and probably the year after when it comes up in the valuation the following year. So now we're not talking about a single year, we're talking about a 3-year period. And it is a burden both on the taxing entity and on the taxpayer to say, we don't know what the tax bill is for this year. Not only that, but we don't know what it is for last year or the year before. That's just a part of the process that's difficult to deal with and difficult to solve. But it's certainly something that both sides, I think, can look at and say, boy, this is just not really the best way for us to be working this out.
Right.
And from our perspective, it may be that the county ends up having to pay back tax revenues. And that's happened relatively recently in a pretty significant way. And as a result of that, now the county has to go back and to say to the citizens, guess what? We need to come back and collect some more tax, either through a special assessment or we have to reduce our income for this year by this amount.
Hmm. All right. Did you want to add something? Or?
Just to clarify a couple of things. You know, it's important when we talk about property tax, we often talk about the counties, but the counties only make up 1/5 of the property tax. This also affects the schools and the cities and everyone else. The counties got into this issue years ago when they saw these centrally assessed taxpayers going and appealing valuation after valuation after valuation. And counties went into this not because they were looking to get more money. Our truth in taxation system in Utah guarantees that you're going to get the same amount of money year from year, whether properties are appreciating or depreciating. But the counties became concerned because we saw this tax shift from the centrally assessed to the locally assessed taxpayer. And when you think of centrally assessed, these are often multinational corporations. Locally assessed, we're talking homeowners and local business owners. And so that was of concern to the counties. And that's ultimately what got the counties involved in this, is because it did, I guess, a sense of fairness. We wanted to ensure, because the counties are very involved, you know, the counties assess the property tax locally. They also collect the property tax for all the other taxing entities. So the counties are tied into this, and they see things that maybe some of these other taxing entities didn't see or weren't as concerned about.
Hmm. So how frequently are counties appealing valuations, and what is the average success rate?
Well, that's two parts question, so let me answer the first part first. We are involved in an appeal of some sort probably every year. The numbers of cases we have initiated appeals on over the last 5 years has been relatively low, and I'm sorry to bring all the numbers with us.
Probably about a half dozen a year. And I think you look at the centrally assessed valuations, those easily hundreds of these valuations every year, and we're appealing about 5 or 6 a year.
Correct. And as far as the success rate, it's not an easy number to identify, and I think you'd probably hear the same thing from the taxpayer side too. A win is not necessarily a complete win, and a loss is not a complete loss. There are a lot of different reasons that an appeal is brought. One of them may be the valuation method was inappropriate, so we're going to challenge that question And as a result, we may get a tiny shift in the valuation, but we've established a legal precedent. Or we may say, here's a legal issue with regard to an appraisal that we think is inappropriate. We think the number is appropriate. Overall, we're maybe 5% off. But what we're arguing is that the property tax division reached this in an appropriate way. You may get a decision out of a court that says, yes, counties, you were right about that legal issue. Valuation doesn't change. So what's really going to be the difference for us as we go forward? It's a hard thing to parse out. I think the fact is that we prevail in some cases, taxpayers prevail in some cases, and the process continues to go on as any litigation process does. But you rarely get complete wins. Sometimes you do.
And just can you give us an understanding of, I mean, how much as far as tax dollar revenue is often at stake with some of these cases? Are we talking tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars? Or
We may be talking about a difference of valuation of $1 billion for a company. We may be talking about a valuation of several hundred million dollars difference, depending on what's being discussed and the type of company. But when you break that down to the property tax rate for a county and then break it down into the amount that's actually coming directly to the county budget, it ends up being a much smaller number. And I could certainly work through numbers for you if you want to talk about what the tax rate is in a given county. But the bottom line is, if you're talking about a $1 billion shift in valuation for a company, you're not talking about anywhere near that amount of shift in tax collections. So we have to weigh out the issue not of whether we're going to get a big benefit from tax returns if we challenge valuation. What we have to work out is, do we think this is legally appropriate? Do we think it meets a constitutional standard? Do we think that we're going to be setting a bad precedent if we don't challenge this question? Or do we think the company is trying to really get a lower valuation than we think is reasonable, and so we're going to defend against that claim? So the percentages of money that come, or the total returns that come to a county from a challenge may be relatively small, but there are a lot of issues involved that may carry out over a long period of time as we move forward.
Okay. I know one concern to you is recent legislation that has been floated. It was introduced last month at the Interim Revenue and Tax Committee meeting and could limit counties' ability to appeal valuation. I just wondered if you could talk about a little bit about what's being proposed. And do you think that some state legislators are inclined to support the concerns of centrally assessed corporations above the interests of counties?
I think that what we're stepping into now is the basic issue and the basic question of what is the business interest of these corporations that are involved in these discussions. And then do some legislators support those business interests, or are they more concerned about what's going on for locally assessed businesses? And I think we need to be very clear. We're not just talking about locally assessed homeowners, we're talking about any business that is not centrally assessed but is locally assessed. Any franchisee in the county that doesn't cross boundaries. Any florist business that pays property tax that's local. All of those local businesses are part of this same group that we're going to court periodically to try to speak for. The fact is that this is a discussion that's been going on for some time. And what I think we saw at the interim committee meeting was the culmination of a long period of discussion by centrally assessed businesses with a number of different legislators who came forward to present what they wanted to present. We certainly were offered the opportunity by the chair of that committee to speak and have people present. But what has not been going on is a discussion about what the best public policy is for how we move this forward. How do we ensure that people are treated fairly in a process? Who is there to speak for locally assessed taxpayers, and who's there to speak for the community with regard to property tax as in opposition to, or in opposition to those centrally assessed taxpayers? From our perspective, the issue is someone needs to be there. And I think the Utah courts have concluded the same thing, that a county has a real interest in the property tax discussion and in the valuation of these centrally assessed properties. I hope that there are no legislators who want to eliminate the counties or the cities or the schools from involvement in this process, but really do want to recognize that there is a counterbalance to those centrally assessed entities and that there has to be a counterbalancing.
Just so we're clear, I mean, is it clear what is being proposed as far as changes to the current system?
Not entirely. There was discussion at the interim committee meeting about some ideas, and we've reached out to some of those legislators to try to set time to get together and sit down, and we're working on that. I'm hopeful that there isn't a rock-solid opinion on exactly what needs to happen. I'm hoping there isn't legislation written already that we'll see in a couple of months, because I think there are some changes to the system that could take place that would create both a little bit more consistency and certainty, a little less litigation, one would hope, and create some improvements. But we'll have to see where the real status is on that.
Okay. You talked about this a moment ago, but what kinds of policy changes regarding how property taxes for centrally assessed businesses are determined would your organization like to see or have lawmakers consider?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that do come to mind that are just maybe simple from our perspective and possibly from the taxpayer side too, and that is the idea of people filing protective appeals. Under the current system, if UAC doesn't file an appeal of a case that they believe is appropriately decided or the valuation's appropriate, then we lose the ability to take the initiative in that case. And so what we'll do periodically is say, wait a minute, we have to make sure we're filing a protective appeal on this because we think the valuation is right and we want to be at the table. I know that's happened to some of the centrally assessed companies this in the last couple of years too, saying if we don't get in there and file our appeal, then we're going to lose out on the ability to do anything about it. Once that process is started, there is an appeal and you're stuck going forward with it. And so the real question I think has to be, is there a way for us as both sides of this process to determine what are those issues that really should be litigated? What are those issues that create a question of law or evaluation that's really out in left field from somebody's point of view? How could we define that ahead of time so we're not going through a litigation process for the purpose of going through litigation? So we've talked about that. I think there are some other possibilities as far as putting money into escrow accounts so that it's possible to say this is what the taxpayer is believed to pay, to be required to pay. The county has to take it in and hold on to that. There's the ability to accrue interest so that if you get down the line a couple of years, the county is able to pay back from what was already there, or the taxpayer is able to pay out what they haven't actually had to pay out so far. Again, there's ideas as far as making the system function better, but the system has to function in a way that allows both the taxpayer and the taxing entity to have a voice in the valuation and the determination. And we would really oppose anything that removed any of the taxing entities from that process. We would support the idea of creating streamlining for processes that limit litigation and that shorten litigation. Certainly those things are in everybody's interest.
Sure. Well, we're close to running out of our time, but I just wanted to ask one more question. The questions surrounding centrally assessed businesses are complicated, and the impacts from how they are taxed can be far-reaching. And because of this, conflicts of interest, such as associations with specific centrally assessed businesses or companies, can arise among members of the Tax Review Commission or state legislators from time to time who are charged with making recommendations for how these businesses and their properties should be taxed. Do you think we should be concerned with conflicts of interest in decision-making, considering this shifting trend of who is having to pay how much in property taxes in recent decades?
I think that that is something we should be concerned with. And I think the problem that arises is, what is a conflict? Where is there a conflict? And I think that that's the challenge that we all have to face. I know that's kind of a vague, wishy-washy way of saying something, but the reality is that the fact that somebody has knowledge of or involvement in or knows people who work for a certain company that's centrally assessed doesn't in itself create a conflict. If I am a decision maker or a CEO of an organization that is centrally assessed and I'm also a legislator, what's my responsibility to step back and to not be involved? Certainly if somebody were on the tax commission making decisions or were judge sitting on tax cases who was also working for a company that had litigation in front of the judge or in front of the tax commission. I think we would clearly say, oh, you need to recuse yourself from this decision. You can't be closely involved in it. But we have some way of drawing a line in those instances, I think. And I think the challenge we face as we go forward through this legislative process is to say, is there something here we should be concerned about? And is there somebody here who's getting a preferential treatment or preferential attention? Or are we in a situation where we're able to say, no, there's an equitable system for giving everybody the opportunity to be heard and to challenge evaluation or to defend a valuation? On my home, I can go through a locally assessed process and I can get an independent body to make a decision on what the value is. That should apply in centrally assessed cases also, and there shouldn't be any question about whether or not the process for making decisions is impartial and gives both the taxing entity and the taxpayer the opportunity to say, here's why we reach the conclusion we do. I think any process that strays too far from that equitable adjudicatory process is going to be something that we should question, and I think that's where our concern would come in as we move forward.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, but Adam Troop and Ari Vandegraaff, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your questions.
You can find this conversation and all of our past interviews at our website, kcpw.org. You're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And thanks again for tuning into The Rundown this afternoon. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis, Ryan Cunningham, and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, tune in for the next in our monthly series of conversations with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.